But now that I'd had it several times, and very fresh, I didn't even need to use makeup base. My skin was flawless. Thanks, Eric. I don't know why I bothered with being proud of myself, because no one was going to look at me twice when I was with Claude. He's close to 6 feet tall, with rippling black hair and brown eyes, the physique of a stripper, six-pack abs and all, and the jaw and cheekbones of a Renaissance statue. Unfortunately, he has the personality of a statue, too. Today, Claude was wearing khakis and a tight tank top under an open green silk shirt. He was playing with a pair of dark glasses. Though Claude's facial expressions when he wasn't on ranged from blank to sullen, today he actually seemed nervous. He scanned the food court area as if he suspected that someone had followed me, and he didn't relax when I dropped into a chair at his table. He had a Chick-fil-A cup in front of him, but he hadn't gotten anything to eat, so I didn't either. "Cousin," he said, "are you well?" He didn't even try to sound sincere, but at least he said the right words. Claude had gotten marginally more polite when I discovered my great-grandfather was his grandfather, but he'd never forget I was mostly human. Claude had as much contempt for humans as most fairies did, but he was definitely fond of bedding humans, as long as they had beard stubble. "Yes, thank you, Claude. It's been a while."
"Since we met?"
"Yes."
And that was just fine with him. "How can I help you?"
"Oh, here comes Claudine." He looked relieved. Claudine was wearing a brown suit with big gold buttons and a brown, cream, and tan striped blouse. She dressed very conservatively for work, and though the outfit was becoming, something about the cut made her look somewhat less slim, I noticed. She was Claude's twin. There had been another sister, their triplet, Claudette, but Claudette had been murdered. I guess if there are two remaining out of three, you call the living two twins? Claudine was as tall as Claude, and as she bent to kiss him on the cheek, their hair, exactly the same shade, mingled in a cascade of dark ripples. She kissed me, too. I wondered if all the Fae are as into physical contact as the fairies are. My cousin had a tray full of food, French fries, chicken nuggets, some kind of dessert, a big sugary drink. "What kind of trouble is Nye all in?" I asked, going directly to the point. "What kind of enemies does he have? Are they all actual fairies, or are they some other kind of fae?" There was a moment of silence while Claudine and Claude noted my brisk mood. They weren't at all surprised at my questions, which I thought was significant.
"Our enemies are fairies," Claudine said. "The other fae don't mix in our politics as a rule, though we're all variations on the same theme, like pygmies, Caucasians, and Asians are variations on human beings." She looked sad. "All of us are less than we used to be."
She tore open a ketchup package and squirted it all over her fries. She stuck three fries in her mouth at one time. Wow, hungry.
"It would take hours to explain our whole lineage," Claude said, but he wasn't dismissing me. He was simply stating a fact. "We come from the line of fairies that claims kinship to the sky. Our grandfather, your great-grandfather, is one of the few surviving members of our royal family."
"He's a prince," I said, because that was one of the few facts I knew. Prince Charming, Prince Valiant, Prince of the City. The title carried a lot of weight.
"Yes, there is another prince, Brandon."
Diantha had mentioned Brandon.
"He is the son of Niall's older brother, Rogan. Rogan claimed kinship to the sea, and from there his influence spread to all bodies of water. Rogan recently has gone to the Summerlands."
"Dead," Claudine translated before she took a bite of her chicken. Claude shrugged.
"Yes, Rogan's dead. He was the only one who could rein in Brandon, and you should know Brandon's the one who..."
But Claude stopped in mid-sentence because his sister had her hand clamped down on his arm. A woman who was feeding a little boy French fries looked over at us curiously, her attention attracted by Claudine's sudden gesture. Claudine gave Claude a look that could blister paint. He nodded, removed his arm from her grip, and began to speak again.
Brandon disagrees very strongly with Niall about policy.
The twins looked at each other. Finally, Claudine nodded.
Brandon believes all the humans with fairy blood should be eradicated. He believes every time one of us mates with a human, we lose some of our magic.
I cleared my throat, trying to get rid of the lump of fear that had risen to block it.
So, Brandon's an enemy. Any more royalty on Niall's side? I asked in a choked voice.
A less than prince. His title doesn't translate.
Claude said,
Our father, Dylan, son of Niall, and his first wife, Branna. Our mother is Bina. If Niall goes to the Summerlands, Dylan will replace him as prince, but of course he must wait.
The names were unfamiliar.
Spell those, please, I said,
and Claudine said,
B-I-N-N-E, D-I-L-L-O-N.
Niall didn't live happily with Branna, and it took him a long time to love our father, Dylan. Niall preferred his half-human sons. She smiled at me to reassure me that humans were okay with her, I guess. Niall had told me once I was his only living relative, but that wasn't true. Niall was definitely swayed by emotion, not facts. I needed to remember that. Claude and Claudine didn't seem to blame Niall's partiality on me, to my huge relief.
So, who's on Brandon's side? I asked.
Dermot, said Claudine. She looked at me expectantly. I knew that name. I struggled to remember where I'd heard it.
He's my grandfather Fintan's brother, I said slowly. Niall's other son by Einan. But he's half-human.
Einan had been a human woman seduced by Niall centuries ago. She thought he was an angel, which gives you some idea how good fairies can look when they don't need to look human.
My half-human great-uncle was trying to kill his dad?
Did Niall tell you that Fintan and Dermot were twins?
Claude asked.
No, I said, astonished.
Dermot was the younger by a few minutes. The twins were not identical, you understand,
he said. He was enjoying my ignorance.
They were...
He paused, looked baffled.
I don't know the right term, he said.
Fraternal? Okay, interesting, but so...
Actually, Claudine said, looking down intently at her chicken, your brother Jason is the spitting image of Dermot.
Are you suggesting that... What are you suggesting?
I was ready to be indignant once I knew why.
We're only telling you that this is why Niall has been naturally inclined to favor you over your brother, Claude said. Niall loved Fintan, but Dermot defied Niall at every turn. He openly rebelled against our grandfather and pledged his loyalty to Brandon, though Brandon despises him. In addition to Dermot's resemblance to Jason, which is only a quirk of genes, Dermot is an asshole like Jason. You can see why Niall doesn't claim kinship with your brother.
I felt a moment's pity for Jason until my common sense woke me up.
So Niall has enemies besides Brandon and Dermot?
They have their own followers and associates, including a few assassins.
But your dad and your mom are on Niall's side?
Yes. Others are too, of course. All of us sky people.
So I have to watch out for any approaching fairies, and they might attack me at any time because I'm Niall's blood.
Yes. The Fey world is too dangerous, especially now. That's one reason we live in the human world.
Claude glanced at Claudine, who was wolfing chicken nuggets like she'd been starving. Claudine swallowed, patted her mouth with the paper napkin, and said,
Here's the most important point.
She popped in another nugget and glanced at Claude, signaling him to take over.
If you see someone who looks like your brother but isn't, Claude said.
Claudine swallowed. Run like hell, she advised.
Chapter 9. I drove home more confused than ever. Though I loved my great-grandfather as much as I could on our short acquaintance, and I was absolutely ready to love him even more, and I was willing to back him up to the limit because we were kin, I still didn't know how to fight this war, or how to dodge it either. Fairies did not want to be known to the human world, and they never would. They weren't like the were-animals or the vampires who wanted to share in the planet with us. There was much less reason for the fairies to keep in line with human policies and rules. They could do anything they wished and vanish back into their secret place. For about the millionth time, I wished I had a normal great-grandfather instead of this improbable, glorious, and inconvenient fairy prince version. Then I was ashamed of myself. I should be happy for what I'd been given. I hoped God hadn't noticed my lapse of appreciation. I'd already had a busy day, and it was only 2 o'clock. This wasn't shaping up to be my normal day off. Usually, I did laundry, cleaned house, went to the store, read, paid bills. But today was so pretty, I wanted to stay outside. I wanted to work on something that would allow me to think at the same time. There was sure plenty to mull over. I looked at the flower beds around the house and decided to weed. This was my least favorite chore, maybe because it was the one I'd often been assigned as a child. Gran had believed we should be brought up to work. It was in her honor that I tried to keep the flower beds looking nice, and now I sighed and made up my mind to get the job done. I'd start with the bed by the driveway on the south side of the house. I went over to our metal tool shed, the latest in a series of tool sheds that had served the Stackhouse family over the generations we'd lived on this spot. I opened the door with the familiar mingled feelings of pleasure and horror, because someday I was going to have to put in some serious work cleaning out the interior. I still had my grandmother's old trowel. There was no telling who'd used it before her. It was ancient, but so well taken care of that it was better than any modern substitute. I stepped into the shadowy shed and found my gardening gloves and the trowel. I knew from watching Antiques Roadshow that there were people who collected old farm implements. This tool shed would be an Aladdin's cave to such a collector. My family didn't believe in letting things go if they still worked. Though chock full, the shed was orderly, because that had been my grandfather's way. When we'd come to live with him and Gran, he'd drawn an outline for every commonly used tool. That was where he'd wanted that tool to be replaced every time it was used, and that was where it was still kept now. I could reach unerringly for the trowel, which was maybe the oldest tool in the shed. It was heavy, sharper, and narrower than its modern counterparts, but its shape was familiar to my hand. If it had been really, truly spring, I'd have changed back into my bikini to combine business with pleasure. But though the sun was still shining, I wasn't in a carefree mood any longer. I pulled my gardening gloves on because I didn't want to ruin my fingernails. Some of these weeds seemed to fight back. One grew on a thick, fleshy stalk, and it had sharp points on its leaves. If you let it grow long enough, it blossomed. It was really ugly and prickly, and it had to be removed by its roots. There were quite a few of them springing up among the emerging cannas. Gran would have had a fit. I crouched and set to work. With my right hand, I sank the trowel in the soft dirt of the flower bed, loosening the roots of the nasty weed, and pulled it up with my left hand. I shook the stalk to get the dirt off the roots, and then tossed it aside. Before I'd started, I'd put a radio out on the back porch. In no time at all, I was singing aloud with Leanne Rimes. I began to feel less troubled. In a few minutes, I had a respectable pile of uprooted weeds and a glow of virtue. If he hadn't spoken, it would have ended differently.
but since he was full of himself, he had to open his mouth. His pride saved my life. Also, he picked some unwise words. Saying, "I'll enjoy killing you for my lord," is just not the way to make my acquaintance. I have good reflexes, and I erupted from my squatting position with the trowel in my hand, and I drove it upward into his stomach. It slid right in, as if it were designed to be a fairy-killing weapon. And that was exactly what it turned out to be, because the trowel was iron, and he was a fairy. I leaped back and dropped into a half-crouch, still gripping the bloody trowel, and waited to see what he'd do. He was looking down at the blood seeping through his fingers with an expression of absolute amazement, as if he couldn't believe I'd ruined his ensemble. Then he looked at me, his eyes pale blue and huge, and there was a big question on his face, as if he were asking me if I'd really done that to him, if it wasn't some kind of mistake. I began backing up the porch steps, never taking my eyes from him, but he wasn't a threat any longer. As I reached behind me to open the screen door, my would-be murderer crumpled to the ground, still looking surprised. I retreated into the house and locked the door. Then I walked on trembling legs over to the window above the kitchen sink and peered out, leaning as far over the sink as I could. From this angle, I could see only a bit of the crumpled body. "Okay," I said out loud. "Okay." He was dead, looked like. It had been so quick. I started to pick up the wall phone, noticed how my hands were shaking, and spotted my cell phone on the counter where I'd been charging it. Since this was a crisis that definitely called for the head honcho, I speed-dialed my great-grandfather's secret big emergency number. I thought the situation qualified. A male voice, not Niall's, answered.
"Yes?"
the voice said with a cautious tone. Is Niall there?"
"I can reach him. Can I help you?"
"Steady," I told myself. "Steady." "Would you please tell him I've killed a fairy and that he's laid out in my yard and I don't know what to do with the body?"
There was a moment of silence. "Yes, I'll tell him that."
"Pretty soon, you think? Because I'm alone and I'm kind of freaked out."
"Yes, quite soon."
"And someone will come?"
Jeez Louise, I sounded whiny. I made my spine stiffen.
"I mean, I can load him in my car trunk, I guess, or I could call the sheriff."
I wanted to impress this unknown with the fact that I wasn't completely needy and helpless.
"But there's the whole thing with you guys being secret, and he didn't seem to have a weapon, and obviously I can't prove this guy said he'd enjoy killing me."
"You have killed a fairy."
"I said that way back."
Mr. Slow on the uptake. I peered out the window again. "Yeah, he's still not moving. Dead and gone."
This time, the silence lasted so long that I thought I must have blanked out and missed something. I said, "I'm sorry?"
"Are you really? We'll be there very soon." And he hung up.
I couldn't not look, and I couldn't bear to look. I'd seen the dead before, both human and non-human, and since the night I'd met Bill Compton in Merlot's, I'd seen more than my share of bodies. Not that that was Bill's fault, of course. I had goose pimples all over. In about 5 minutes, Niall and another fairy walked out of the woods. There must be some kind of portal out there. Maybe Scotty had beamed them up, or down, and maybe I wasn't thinking too clearly. The two fairies stopped when they saw the body and then exchanged a few words. They seemed astonished, but they weren't scared, and they weren't acting like they expected the guy to get up and fight, so I crept across the back porch and out the screen door. They knew I was there, but they continued their eyeballing of the body. My great-grandfather raised his arm, and I crept under it. He held me to him,
and I glanced up to see that he was smiling.
Okay, that was unexpected.
You're a credit to our family. You've killed my enemy,
he said.
I was so right about humans.
He looked proud as punch. This is a good thing? The other fairy laughed and looked at me for the first time. He had hair the color of butterscotch, and his eyes matched his hair, which to me was so weird that it was really off-putting, though, like all the fairies I'd met, he was gorgeous. I had to suppress a sigh. Between the vampires and the fairies, I was doomed to be a plain Jane.
I'm Dylan, he said.
Oh, Claudine's dad. Nice to meet you. I guess your name means something, too, I said.
Lightning,
he said, and gave me a particularly winsome smile. Who is this? I said, jerking my head at the body.
He was Murray,
Niall said.
He was a close friend of my nephew Brendan.
Murray looked very young. To the human eye, he'd been perhaps 18. He said he was looking forward to killing me, I told them.
But instead, you killed him. How did you do it?
Dylan asked, as if he was asking how I rolled out a flaky pie crust. With my grandmother's trowel, I said. Actually, it's been in my family for a long time. Not like we make a fetish of gardening tools or anything. It just works, and it's there, and there's no need to buy another one. Babbling. They both looked at me. I couldn't tell if they thought I was nuts or what.
Could you show us this gardening tool?
Niall said. Sure. Do you all want some tea or something? I think we've got some Pepsi and some lemonade. No, not lemonade. They die. Sorry, cancel the lemonade. Tea?
No,
said Niall quite gently.
I think not now.
I'd dropped the bloody trowel in among the cannas. When I picked it up and approached them, Dylan flinched.
Iron, he said.
You don't have the gloves on,
Niall said to his son chidingly, and took the trowel from me. His hands were covered with the clear, flexible coating developed in fairy-owned chemical factories. Coated with this substance, fairies were able to go out in the human world with some degree of assurance that they wouldn't get poisoned in the process. Dylan looked chastened.
No, sorry, Father.
Niall shook his head as if he were disappointed in Dylan, but his attention was really on the trowel. He might have been prepared to handle something poisonous to him, but I noticed he still handled it very carefully. It went into him really easily, I said, and had to repress a sudden wave of nausea. I don't know why. It's sharp, but it's not that sharp.
Iron can part our flesh like a hot knife in butter,
Niall said. Ugh.
Well, at least I knew I hadn't suddenly gotten super strong.
He surprised you? Dylan asked.
Though he didn't have the fine, fine wrinkles that made my great-grandfather even more beautiful, Dylan looked only a little younger than Niall, which made their relationship all the more disorienting. But when I looked down at the corpse once more, I was completely back in the present. He sure did surprise me. I was just working away, weeding the flower bed, and the next thing you know, he was standing right there telling me how much he was looking forward to killing me. I'd never done a thing to him, and he scared me, so I kind of came up in a rush with the trowel, and I got him in the stomach.
Again, I wrestled with my own stomach's tendency to heave.
Did he speak any more?
My great-grandfather was trying to ask me casually, but he seemed pretty interested in my answer.
No, sir, I said. He kind of looked surprised, and then he died.
I walked over to the steps and sat down rather suddenly and heavily.
It's not exactly like I feel guilty, I said in a rush of words. It's just that he was trying to kill me, and he was happy about it, and I never did a thing to him. I didn't know anything about him, and now he's dead.
Dylan knelt in front of me. He looked into my face. He didn't exactly look kind, but he looked less detached.
He was your enemy, and now he is dead, he said. This is cause for rejoicing.
Not exactly, I said. I didn't know how to explain.
You're a Christian,
he said, as if he'd discovered I was a hermaphrodite or a fruitarian. I'm a real bad one, I said hurriedly. His lips compressed, and I could see he was trying hard not to laugh. I'd never felt less like mirth with a man I'd killed lying a few feet away. I wondered how many years Murray had walked this earth, and now he was crumpled in a lifeless heap, his blood staining my gravel. Wait a minute. He wasn't anymore. He was turning to dust. It wasn't anything like the gradual flaking away of a vampire. It was more like someone was erasing Murray.
Are you cold?
Niall asked. He didn't seem to think the disappearance of bits of the body was anything unusual.
No, sir. I'm just all upset. I mean, I was sunbathing, and then I went to see Claude and Claudine, and now here I am.
I couldn't take my eyes off the body's incremental disappearance.
You've been lying in the sun and gardening. We like the sun and sky,
he said, as if that was proof positive I had a special relationship with the fairy branch of my family. He smiled at me. He was so beautiful. I felt like an adolescent when I was around him, an adolescent with acne and baby fat. Now I felt like a murderous adolescent.
Are you going to gather up his ashes? I asked.
I rose, trying to look brisk and purposeful. Action would make me feel less miserable. Two pairs of alien eyes stared at me blankly.
Why?
Dylan asked.
To bury them?
They looked horrified.
No, not in the ground,
Niall said, trying to sound less revolted than he was.
That isn't our way.
Then what are you going to do with them?
There was quite a heap of glittering powder on my driveway and in my flower bed, and there was still his torso remaining.
I don't mean to be pushy, but Amelia might come home any time. I don't get a lot of other visitors, but there's the odd UPS delivery person and the meter reader.
Dylan looked at my great-grandfather as if I'd suddenly begun speaking Japanese. Niall said,
Suki shares her house with another woman, and this woman may return at any moment.
Is anyone else going to come after me?
I asked, diverted from my question.
Possibly,
Niall said.
Fintan did a better job of protecting you than I am doing, Suki. He even protected you from me, and I only want to love you. But he wouldn't tell me where you were.
Niall looked sad and harried and tired for the first time since I'd met him.
I've tried to keep you out of it. I imagined I only wanted to meet you before they succeeded in killing me, and I arranged it through the vampire to make my movements less noticeable. But in arranging that meeting, I've drawn you into danger. You can trust my son, Dylan.
He put his hand on the younger fairy's shoulder.
If he brings you a message, it's really from me.
Dylan smiled charmingly, displaying supernaturally white and sharp teeth.
Okay, he was scary, even if he was Claude and Claudine's dad.
I'll talk to you soon,
Niall said, bending over to give me a kiss. The fine, gleaming pale hair fell against my cheek.
He smelled so good.
Fairies do.
I'm sorry, Sookie, he said. I thought I could force them all to accept. Well, I couldn't.
His green eyes glowed with intensity and regret.
Do you have, yes, a garden hose? We could gather up most of the dust, but I think it more practical if you simply distribute it.
He put his arms around me and hugged me, and Dylan gave me a mocking salute. The two took a few steps to the trees, and then they simply vanished into the undergrowth as deer do when you encounter them in the woods. So that was that. I was left in my sunny yard, all by myself, with a sizable pile of glittering, powdery dust in a body-shaped heap on the gravel. I added to my mental list of the odd things I'd done that day. I'd entertained the police, sunbathed, visited at a mall with some fairies, weeded, and killed someone. Now it was powdered corpse removal time, and the day wasn't over yet. I turned on the faucet, unwound the hose enough so the flow would reach the right area, and compressed the spray head to aim the water at the fairy dust. I had a weird, out-of-body feeling. You'd think I'd be getting used to it, I said out loud, startling myself even more. I didn't want to add up the people I'd killed, though technically most of them weren't people. Before the past 2 years, maybe even less if I counted down the months, I'd never laid a finger on another person in anger, aside from hitting Jason in the stomach with my plastic baseball bat when he tore my Barbie's hair out. I pulled myself up sharply. The deed was done now. No going back. I released the spray head and turned the hose off at the faucet. In the fading sunlight, it was a little hard to tell, but I thought I'd dispersed the dust pretty thoroughly. But not from my memory, I said seriously. Then I had to laugh, and it sounded a little crazy. I was standing out in my backyard, hosing down fairy blood and making melodramatic statements all to myself. Next, I'd be doing the Hamlet soliloquy that I'd had to memorize in high school. This afternoon had brought me down hard, to a real bad place. I bit down on my bottom lip. Now that I was definitely over the intoxication of having a living relative, I had to face the fact that Niall's behavior was charming, mostly, but unpredictable. By his own admission, he'd inadvertently put me at great risk. Maybe I should have wondered before this what my grandfather Fintan had been like. Niall had told me he'd watched over me without ever making himself known, an image that seemed creepy but touching. Niall was creepy and touching, too. Great Uncle Dylan just seemed creepy.
This ends Disc 4. Dead and Gone, Disc 5.
The temperature was dropping with the creeping darkness, and I was shivering by the time I went in the house. The hose might freeze tonight, but I couldn't bring myself to care. There were clothes in the dryer, and I had to eat since I'd missed eating lunch at the mall. It was getting closer to supper time. I had to concentrate on small things. Amelia phoned while I was folding the laundry. She told me she was about to leave work and was going to meet Trey for dinner and a movie. She asked me if I wanted to come along, but I said I was busy. Amelia and Trey didn't need a third wheel, and I didn't need to feel like one. It would have been nice to have some company, but what would I have done for social chit-chat? Wow, that trowel slid into his stomach like it was jello. I shuddered and tried to think of what to do next. An uncritical companion, that was who I needed. I missed the cat we'd called Bob, though he hadn't been born a cat and wasn't one now. Maybe I could get another cat, a real one.
It wasn't the first time I'd considered going to the animal shelter. I'd better wait until this fairy crisis was over before I did that. There wasn't any point in picking out a pet if I was liable to be abducted or killed at any moment, right? Wouldn't be fair to the animal. I caught myself giggling, and I knew that couldn't be good. Time to stop brooding. Time to get something done. First, I'd clean off the trowel and put it away. I carried it to the kitchen sink, and I scrubbed it and rinsed it. The dull iron seemed to have a new gloss on it, like a bush that had gotten watered after a drought. I held it to the light and stared at the old tool. I shook myself. Okay, that had really been an unpleasant simile. I banished the idea and scrubbed. When I thought the trowel looked spotless, I washed it and dried it all over again. Then I walked quickly out the back door and through the dark to hang the damn thing back in the tool shed on its designated hook. I wondered if I might not get a cheap new trowel at Walmart after all. I wasn't sure I could use the iron one the next time I wanted to move some jonquil bulbs. It would feel like using a gun to pry out nails. I hesitated, the trowel poised to hang from its designated hook. Then I made up my mind and carried it back to the house. I paused on the back steps, admiring the last streak of light for a few moments until my stomach growled. What a long day it had been. I was ready to settle in front of the television with a plate of something bad for me, watching some show that wouldn't improve my mind at all. I heard the crunching of a car coming up the driveway as I was opening the screen door. I waited outside to see who my caller might be. Whoever it was, they knew me a little because the car proceeded around to the back. In a day full of shocks, here was another. My caller was Quinn, who was not supposed to stick his big toe into Area 5. He was driving a Ford Taurus, a rental car. Oh, great, I said. I'd wanted company earlier, but not this company. As much as I'd liked and admired Quinn, this conversation promised to be just as upsetting as the day had been. He got out of his car and strode over to me, his walk graceful as always. Quinn is a very large, shaved, bald man with pansy purple eyes. He is one of the few remaining were-tigers in the world, and probably the only male were-tiger on the North American continent. We'd broken up the last time I'd seen him. I wasn't proud of how I'd told him or why I'd done it, but I thought I'd been pretty clear about us not being a couple. Yet here he was, and his big warm hands were resting on my shoulders. Any pleasure I might have felt at seeing him again was drowned by the wave of anxiety that swept over me. I felt trouble in the air. "You shouldn't be here," I said. "Eric turned down your request. He told me so."
"Did he ask you first? Did you know I wanted to see you?"
The darkness was now intense enough to trigger the outside security light. Quinn's face had harsh lines in the yellow glare, his gaze locked with mine. "No, but that's not the point," I said. I felt rage on the wind. It wasn't my rage.
"I think it is."
It was sunset. There simply wasn't time to get into an extended argument. "Didn't we say it all last time?" I didn't want to go through another scene, no matter how fond I was of this man.
"You said what you thought was all, babe. I disagree."
Oh, great. Just what I needed. But since I really do know that not everything is about me, I counted to 10 and said, "I know I didn't give you any slack when I told you we shouldn't see each other anymore, Quinn, but I did mean what I said. What's changed in your personal situation? Is your mom able to take care of herself now? Or has Franny grown up enough to be able to manage your mom if she escapes?" Quinn's mom had been through an awful time, and she'd come out of it more or less nuts, Actually, more. His sister, Franny, was still a teenager.
He bowed his head for a moment, as if he were gathering himself. Then he looked directly into my eyes again.
"Why are you harder on me than on anyone else?"
he asked. "I'm not," I said instantly. But then I thought, "Am I?"
"Have you asked Eric to give up Fantasia? Have you asked Bill to give up his computer enterprise? Have you asked Sam to turn his back on his family?"
"What?" I began, trying to work out the connection.
"You're asking me to give up other people I love, my mother and my sister, if I want to have you,"
he said. "I'm not asking you to do anything," I said, feeling the tension inside me ratchet up to an almost intolerable level. "I told you that I wanted to be first with the guy in my life, and I still figure that your family has got to come first with you because your mom and your sister are not exactly stand-on-their-own-two-feet kind of women. I haven't asked Eric to give up Fantasia. Why would I do that? And where does Sam come into it?" I couldn't even think of a reason to mention Bill. I was so over him.
"Bill loves his status in the human and vampire worlds, and Eric loves his little piece of Louisiana more than he'll ever love you,"
Quinn said, and he sounded almost sorry for me. That was ridiculous. "Where did all the hating come from?" I asked, holding my hands spread in front of me. "I didn't quit dating you because of any feelings I had for someone else. I quit dating you because I thought your plate was full already."
"He's trying to wall you off from everyone else who cares for you," Quinn said, focusing on me with unnerving intensity. "And look at all the dependence he has."
"You're talking about Eric?"
"All Eric's dependents were vampires who could damn well take care of themselves." "He'll never dump his little area for you. He'd never let his little pack of sworn vamps serve someone else. He'll never..."
I couldn't stand this anymore. I gave a scream of sheer frustration. I actually stomped my foot like a 3-year-old. "I haven't asked him to!" I yelled. "What are you talking about? Did you show up to tell me no one else will ever love me? What's wrong with you?"
"Yes, Quinn," said a familiar, cold voice. "What's wrong with you?"
I swear I jumped at least 6 inches. I'd let my quarrel with Quinn absorb my attention, and I hadn't felt Bill's arrival.
"You're frightening Sookie,"
Bill said from a yard behind me, and my spine shivered at the menace in his voice.
"That won't happen, Tiger."
Quinn snarled. His teeth began growing longer, sharper before my eyes. Bill stood at my side in the next second. His eyes were glowing an eerie, silvery brown. Not only was I afraid they'd kill each other, I realized that I was really tired of people popping on and off my property like it was a train station on the Supernatural Railroad. Quinn's hands became clawed. A growl rumbled deep in his chest.
"No!"
I said, willing them to listen to me. This was the day from hell.
"You're not even on the list, vampire,"
Quinn said, and his voice wasn't really his any longer.
"You're the past." "I will make you a rug on my floor,"
Bill said, and his voice was colder and smoother than ever, like ice on glass. The two idiots launched themselves at each other. I started to jump in to stop them, but the functioning part of my brain told me that would be suicidal. I thought, my grass is going to get sprinkled by a little more blood this evening. What I should have been thinking was, I need to get the hell out of the way. In fact, I should have run inside and locked the door and left them to it. But that was hindsight. Actually, what I did was stand there for a moment, hands fluttering uselessly, trying to figure out how to separate them. and then the two grappling figures lurched and staggered. Quinn threw Bill away from him with all his strength. Bill cannoned into me with such force that I actually went up in the air an inch or two, and then, very decisively, down I came. Chapter 10. Cold water trickled over my face and neck. I spluttered and choked as some trickled into my mouth.
"Too much?"
asked a hard voice, and I pried open my eyes to see Eric. We were in my room, and only the bathroom light was on.
"Enough," I said.
The mattress shifted as Eric got up to carry the wash rag into my bathroom. In a second, he was back with a hand towel, dabbing at my face and neck. My pillow was damp, but I decided not to worry about it. The house was cooling off now that the sun was gone, and I was lying there in my underwear.
"Cold," I said. "Where are my clothes?"
"Stained,"
Eric said. There was a blanket at the end of the bed, and he pulled it up over me. He turned his back to me for a moment, and I heard his shoes hit the floor. Then he got under the blanket with me and propped himself up on an elbow. He was looking down at me. His back was to the light coming from the bathroom, so I couldn't discern his expression.
"Do you love him?"
he said.
"Are they alive?"
No point in deciding if I loved Quinn or not if he was dead, right? Or maybe Eric meant Bill. I couldn't decide. I realized I felt a little odd.
"Quinn drove away with a few broken ribs and a broken jaw,"
Eric told me, his voice quite neutral.
"Bill will heal tonight if he hasn't already."
I considered that.
"I guess you had something to do with Bill being here?"
"I knew when Quinn disobeyed our ruling. He was sighted within half an hour of crossing into my area, and Bill was the closest vampire to send to your house. His task was to make sure you weren't being harassed while I made my way here. He took his role a little too seriously. I'm sorry you were hurt,"
Eric said, his voice stiff. He wasn't used to making apologies, and I smiled in the darkness. It was almost impossible for me to feel anxious, I noticed in a distant kind of way. And yet surely I ought to be upset and angry.
"So they stopped fighting when I hit the ground, I hope?"
"Yes, the collision ended the scuffle."
"And Quinn left on his own?"
I ran my tongue around my mouth, which tasted funny, kind of sharp and metallic.
"Yes, he did. I told him I would take care of you. He knew he'd crossed too many lines by coming to see you, since I told him not to enter my area. Bill was less accepting, but I made him return to his house."
"Typical sheriff behavior." "Did you give me some of your blood?" I asked.
Eric nodded quite casually.
"You had been knocked unconscious,"
he said.
"And I know that is serious. I wanted you to feel well. It was my fault."
I sighed.
"Mr. High-handed," I muttered.
"Explain. I don't know this term."
"It means someone who thinks he knows what's best for everyone. He makes decisions for them without asking them." Maybe I had put a personal spin on the term, but so what?
"Then I am high-handed," Eric said with no shame whatsoever. "I'm also very..."
He dipped his head and kissed me slowly, leisurely.
"Horny," I said.
"Exactly,"
he said and kissed me again.
"I've worked with my new masters. I've shored up my authority. I can have my own life now. It's time I claimed what is mine."
I'd told myself I'd make up my own mind, no matter how Eric and I were tied by our blood exchanges. After all, I still had free will. But whether or not the inclination had been planted by Eric's blood donation, I found that my body was strongly in favor of returning the kiss and of trailing the palm of my hand down Eric's broad back. Through the fabric of his shirt, I could feel the muscles and tendons and the bones of his spine as they moved. My hands seemed to remember the map of Eric's topography, even as my lips remembered the way he kissed. We went on this way very slowly for a few minutes as he reacquainted himself with me.
"Do you really remember?"
I asked him.
"Do you really remember staying with me before? Do you remember what it felt like?"
"Oh, yes,"
he said.
"I remember."
He had my bra unhooked before I'd even realized his hand was back there.
"How could I forget these?"
he said, his hair falling around his face as his mouth fastened on my breast. I felt the tiny sting of his fangs and the sharp pleasure of his mouth. I touched the fly of his jeans, brushed my hand against the bulge inside, and suddenly the moment for being tentative was over. His jeans were off, and his shirt too, and my panties vanished. His long, cool body pressed full length against my warm one. He kissed me over and over in a kind of frenzy. He made a hungry noise, and I echoed it. His fingers probed me, fluttering against the hard nub in a way that made me squirm.
"Eric,"
I said, trying to position myself underneath him.
"Now."
He said,
"Oh, yes."
He slid inside as if he'd never been gone, as if we'd made love every night for the past year.
"This is best,"
he whispered, and his voice had that accent I caught occasionally, that hint of a time and place that was so far distant I could not imagine them.
"This is best,"
he said again.
"This is right."
He pulled out a little, and I made a choked noise.
"Not hurting?"
he asked.
"Not hardly,"
I said.
"I am too big for some."
"Bring it on,"
I said. He shoved forward.
"Oh my God,"
I said through clenched teeth. My fingers were digging hard into the muscles of his arms.
"Yes, again!"
He was as deep inside me as he could get without an operation, and he glowed above me, his white skin shining in the darkness of the room. He said something in a language I didn't recognize. After a long moment, he repeated it. And then he began to move quicker and quicker until I thought I would be pounded into pieces, but I kept up. I kept up. Until I saw his fangs glisten as he bent over me. When he bit my shoulder, I left my body for a minute. I'd never felt anything so good. I didn't have enough breath to scream or even speak. My arms were around Eric's back, and I felt him shudder all over as he had his own good minute. I was so shaken I couldn't have talked if my life had depended on it. We lay in silence, exhausted. I didn't mind his weight on me. I felt safe. He licked the bite mark in a lazy way, and I smiled into the darkness. I stroked his back as if I were soothing an animal. I felt better than I'd felt in months. It had been a while since I'd had sex, and this was like gourmet sex. Even now, I felt little jolts of pleasure ripple out from the epicenter of the orgasm.
"Will this change the blood bond?"
I asked. I was careful not to sound like I was accusing him of something, but of course I was.
"Felipe wanted you. The stronger our bond, the less chance there is he can maneuver you away."
I flinched.
"I can't do that."
"You won't need to,"
Eric said, his voice flowing over me like a feather quilt.
"We are pledged with the knife. We are bonded. He can't take you from me."
I could only be grateful I didn't have to go to Las Vegas. I didn't want to leave home.
I couldn't imagine how it would feel to be surrounded by so much greed. Well, yes, I could. It would be awful.
Eric's big, cool hand cupped my breast, and he stroked with his long thumb.
"Bite me,"
Eric said, and he meant it literally.
"Why? You said you already gave me some."
"Because it makes me feel good,"
he said, and moved on top of me again.
"Just for that."
"You can't be..."
But he was ready again.
"Would you like to be on top?"
Eric asked.
"We could do that for a while,"
I said, trying not to sound too femme fatale. In fact, it was hard not to growl. Before I could even gather myself, we'd reversed positions. His eyes were intent on mine. His hands went up to my breasts, caressing and pinching gently, and his mouth followed after his hands. I was afraid I was losing control of my leg muscles. I was so relaxed. I moved slowly, not very regularly. I felt the tension gradually beginning to build again. I began to focus, to move steadily.
"Slow,"
he said, and I reduced the pace. His hands found my hips and began to direct me.
"Oh,"
I said, as a sharper pleasure began to seep through me. He'd found my pleasure center with his thumb. I began to speed things up, and if he tried to slow me after that, I ignored it. I rose and fell faster and faster, and then I took his wrist, and I bit with all my strength, sucked on the wound. He yelled, an incoherent sound of release and relief. That was enough to finish me, and I collapsed on top of him. I licked his wrist lazily, though I didn't have the coagulant in my saliva that he possessed.
"Perfect,"
he said.
"Perfect."
I started to tell him he couldn't possibly mean that, as many women as he'd had over the centuries, but I figured, why spoil the moment? Let it be. In a rare moment of wisdom, I listened to my own advice.
"Can I tell you what happened today?" I asked after we drowsed for a few minutes.
"Of course, my lover."
His eyes were half open. He was lying on his back beside me, and the room smelled of sex and vampire.
"I'm all ears, for the moment at least."
He laughed. This was the real treat, or at least one of the real treats, having someone with whom to share the day's events. Eric was a good listener, at least in his post-coital relaxed state. I told him about Andy and Letesta's visit, about Diantha's appearance while I was sunbathing.
"I thought I tasted the sun on your skin,"
he said, stroking my side.
"Go on."
So off I babbled like a brook in the spring, telling him about my rendezvous with Claude and Claudine and all they'd told me about Brendan and Dermot. Eric was more alert when I was talking about the fairies.
"I smelled fairies around the house,"
he said.
"But in my overwhelming anger at seeing your tiger-striped suitor, I put the thought aside. Who came here?"
"Well, this bad fairy named Murray, but don't worry, I killed him," I said.
If I'd ever doubted I had Eric's full attention, I didn't doubt it any longer.
"How did you do that, my lover?"
he asked very gently. I explained, and by the time I got to the part where my great-grandfather and Dylan showed up, Eric sat up, the blanket falling away. He was completely serious and alert.
"The body is gone?"
he asked for the third time, and I said, "Yes, Eric, it is."
"It might be a good idea for you to stay in Shreveport,"
Eric said.
"You could even stay in my house."
That was a first. I'd never been invited to Eric's house before. I had no idea where it was. I was astonished and sort of touched.
"I really appreciate that," I said, "but it would be awful hard for me to commute from Shreveport back here to work."
You would be much safer if you left your job until this problem with the fairies is resolved.
Eric cocked his head while he looked at me, his face quite expressionless.
No thanks, I said. Nice of you to offer. But it would be really inconvenient for you, I bet, and I know it would be for me.
Pam is the only other person I've invited.